Thanks for coming. Thanks for getting up early. Hope it wasn't too heavy a night. My voice is just about holding out after about 7 days here, so hopefully it will last for this. But yeah, really looking forward to sharing kind of insights and overviews of what's happening in the concert scene right now in terms of these incredibly scaled and large concert experiences like the one here, which is Beyoncé's recent tour, designed by the amazing Ez Devlin and a whole host of others. I'm just going to dig in a little bit in terms of like, well, who I am first. I'm Alex Wills. I'm Chief Experience Officer at Disguise. I don't know how many people know Disguise. Show of hands, if people know Disguise. Few nods, great. Well, that's okay, because I'm going to introduce us a little bit. And really, the story of Disguise is kind of mapped to this story of this evolution of concerts. It really is. And there's a whole host of other really great companies as well I'm going to touch upon as well, including Stewfish, including Treatment Studios, and a few designers along the way, because it really is an amazing sort of collaborative effort now that's achieving these enormous shows. So good morning, thanks for coming. It should be a good 40-odd minutes, and hopefully have some time for questions. And like I said, going to introduce, going to talk about the kind of evolution, what's happened, where's it come from, where's it going, what's driving it, who are the people behind it, how's that kind of shaping up. And then going to get a little bit into like, well, what's next, or what's kind of current, what's happening. So this idea of virtualization, hybridization is another word for it, and just looking at some of the trends there and what's kind of going on in that space. And then this idea of convergence, one of the things you'll see from the work that we're doing at Disguise. We came from live events, and we created the technology for live events, but that same technology now is being used across multiple verticals. It's being used across film and TV for virtual production. You've seen these huge LED stages. It's the same LEDs that's the back of stage for Taylor Swift's concerts, clipped together. The resolution's getting higher and higher, and that same technology is underpinning that. It's also underpinning big broadcast studios. The green screen's going, they're being replaced by LED. So there's this interesting convergence. And the other area is location-based experience, immersive experiences. Again, massive LED or projection often as well. They're the two sort of display technologies. And the same sort of platform and the same tools and the same creative teams and the same content engines like Notch and like Unreal Engine are kind of driving all of those. So I'm going to cover that and then wrap it up at the end, but hopefully with an intact voice. So quick introduction. So who is Disguise? Well, we deliver things like this. We are the sort of technology platform that enables great partners. This was done by a company called Build for the Al Wasl Dome at Expo 2020. And we create the hardware and the software that kind of enables these incredibly scaled experiences. This was over 200 projectors perfectly synced together to create this amazing canvas. I'm just going to play a short video, which can't be loaded, but that's all right. It's a great video, but I have to talk over it or imagine it. Here we go. Let's just click on. There we go. So yeah, our platform is probably behind around 90% of A-list tours. It's on tour at the moment with Taylor Swift. It's on tour at the moment with the top 10 kind of artists around the world. And like I said, it's this hardware and software that does all the visual material. We don't do the sound. We integrate with everything. We integrate with lights. We integrate with sound. But it's all the visual material, and that visual material is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're going to dive more deeply into the Adele concert that was at Vegas, because it's a really good example of a lot going on. It's quite simple there, but there's a huge amount of automation. There's a huge amount of projection mapping, all happening in real time. If you go to any of these concerts, certainly if you go and you're seeing the setup, you'll see our test pattern everywhere. When people are kind of calibrating the stages, most of the stages are kind of running the platform. It is just the sort of standard to do these huge scaled platform scaled events. For those who don't know, Middle Beast is, I think, officially now one of the biggest festivals in the world in Saudi Arabia. Enormous stage, enormous amount of people that go there, and incredible effort with all the teams that put that together. You all know Coachella. I'm sure you all know Glastonbury. And again, all of those stages, or many of those stages, are running our platform. This one, the Icon stage, is a fun one, sort of hidden away, not one of the main stages, but doing a lot with projection and visual material there. And like I said, top 10 global artists are touring with the platform. So all of these amazing artists are using the platform to create incredible shows, really, really immersive and scaled shows, which is fantastic. And then the other side of the business, like I said, we live event technology company for years, 20 years we've come out of that. But like I said, the technology, and you can see a little snippet of one of our studios in New York, Pier 59, is the same technology, and you'll see how this evolution happened, is now driving virtual production stages and studios globally. So it's that evolutionary journey that we've been on. And these are the other kind of key verticals that we're looking at. And there's this connective tissue, like I said, there's a rather big show there in Las Vegas that we're very proud of. The virtual production vertical kind of came out of that. Broadcast is coming out of that as well. That's the catalyst stage in ESPN's test facility in Connecticut. And that's Mr. Tom Hanks in a lovely moon experience in a place called the Lightroom in London, which if you're in town, can highly recommend it. It's a really, really well done immersive experience. Again, using about 12 projectors seamlessly tied together. And the first show was with David Hockney and really nice. So again, there's a sort of common theme here, this sort of, you know, this visual experience, you know, era that we're in is kind of scaling and growing. You know, audiences are expecting more. It's obviously everyone's got a camera, everyone's filming these things. That's kind of what they want to take away. You hear about this kind of Instagram and iPhone moment that people want. And so, you know, this technology is kind of delivering this across these different multiples. And this is a rather large one. This was the Joshua Tree tour in 2017. This at the time was the largest screen ever put on tour. And, you know, it's one thing to put these screens up for, well, it's hard enough putting them up for a virtual production shoot, but putting them up so they have to be put down every time for those of you, and I'm sure a lot of you are in the business, is no mean feat. And that was, I think PRG was behind that with a whole host of other companies that we're going to get into. But it was the highest resolution screen at the time, which creates all sorts of challenges. And you can see just that kind of iPhone effect and other handsets there as well, just taking that in because it was just so visually awe-inspiring at the time. So not getting too deep into our tech, but it's worth sort of showing because I think a lot of the times, you know, people do just talk about the kind of hardware, and it takes a lot of hardware to do something like, you know, that. A lot of boxes and a lot of sort of, you know, GPU power and horsepower, but we manufacture and design all those boxes ourselves. But the really sort of magic is the kind of, you know, the interplay with the software. And that's the sort of real magic sort of that was designed over sort of 15 years ago by one of the founders to create kind of a digital twin of the environment. So what it does is, you'll see, and I'll go to another slide in a minute, it creates a perfect twin of the stage set, of all of the screens. Any single sort of pixel or projection map surface is brought in at sort of inch perfect or pixel perfect resolution. So if you zoom into the visualizer, you will literally see the individual pixels. And depending on the pixel pitch of the LED, if it's 1.8 or 2.2 or 2.5, you'll literally see individual pixels. So it's not just this is a nice visualizer, it really is the whole thing. And the reason for all of this is hopefully tease up what I'm going to talk about and deconstruct the kind of evolution of the concert experience. It can take all sorts of content. For those of you know in live, Unreal is definitely playing a massive part, increasingly so, but really one of the mainstays is Notch, amazing bit of software, and you know, hugely responsive. It's a real-time bit of software, and a ton of people are still using this, and often big gigs or immersive experiences are a mix, you know, increasingly of kind of Notch and UE. And then the other piece is just, it's a hugely open platform. It plugs into any lighting desk or, you know, it uses DMX and OSC and all of those things as well to make sure that it's as open, as flexible as possible, because we've been in the sort of touring game for a long time and we know kind of what the demands are and the needs are in that space. So this is the core bit of software. This is from Ed Sheeran's tour, which was, I think, just eclipsed by Taylor Swift's tour, but one of the biggest tours on the planet in recent years. Huge, hugely successful. And as you can see there, you know, it was a really complex design, I think by Mark Cunliffe's studio in the UK. So you've got a huge LED wraparound in the middle, and then you've got these lovely kind of plectrum style you know, visuals, LEDs around, and then even LED around each column. And obviously, as you know, that has to be set up and packed down for every single show. So hugely modular and scalable. And then it needs to just perform, you know, all the time. I sort of joke that, you know, you cannot have a blue screen of death well above Ed Sheeran or above Beyonce, and it has to work and work and work. If something fails or blows up, there's a huge amount of redundancy built into the software and the hardware. So it just will carry on working flawlessly. And that's an example of, you know, really lands the kind of digital twin aspect. You know, I think, you know, that's it sort of, it's kind of one-to-one. And so, you know, exactly what's playing out. The way the software works is kind of a timeline controller at the bottom. I wonder if we bring the lights down a little bit. I don't know if that's possible. Not hugely, but just to sort of bring it down a bit so you can see a bit better. And yeah, you can see exactly what's sort of running through that at the time. Yeah, that's great. Thanks. And that's how it's set up. So how it roughly happens is you'll work with a whole host of people in terms of what the content's going to be, what the stage design's going to be. And we're going to get into that. And we're going to look at a couple of iconic companies, Stewfish and Treatment, who do that. Then there's obviously the staging, there's the putting it together. That could be PRG, that could be Fuse. And there's others in the mix as well, like Tait, who's a huge player in this space. And then how Designer works, the nice thing about it is it's all the way up at the previs stage. So you can start pre-visualizing what the tour's going to look like, what the content environment's going to look like straight away. But it's not just a previs tool and then you kind of chuck it away. It's the previs down to full production finish. So it's the same workflow and the same tool set that you can collaborate on up front. And collaboration is the kind of name of the game in this. And then you just add in along the timeline all the different sections, all the different content. You prep when you get onto rehearsals. That's when the servers come in. You put it all together. After a bit of tinkering, it'll all work perfectly. And then, you know, you really get it locked in rehearsals because that's the time to fail and iterate. And then when you're on the tour, it's got to work every night. So what's happened? What has happened with the evolution of concerts? Well, we started off, you know, pretty big to start with. And so we'll just go a little bit back to the beginning, a little bit back to the beginning of Disguise, because it's not just, again, I don't want it to just be about Disguise, but the journey that we've been on, it kind of maps exactly what's been happening and has got to us this point now with these incredibly large and scaled immersive experience. It's sort of that same journey we've been on is what the industry has been on, ably supported by some really, really great partners along the way. So actually, Disguise wasn't originally called Disguise. It was actually part of United Visual Artists. And for those of you who don't know, UVA was an amazing art collective, still going today, doing amazing shows, and really playing around with creativity and technology, but really, you know, utilizing technology to deliver incredible experiences. A lot of them were kind of immersive experiences. These were some at the V&A. That's a bit of the Massive Attack show, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit. You know, they really were sort of pushing the boundaries of what an immersive experience could be, of what, you know, the use of light, the use of programmed lighting techniques, mapping projections into different surfaces. So they really were a trailblazer at the time. And one of the big early gigs that they did, which was really pushing the envelope at the time, was the 100th Window Tour with Massive Attack. And this kind of seems a bit, I mean, this was about 15, 20 years ago. So these days it feels a little bit kind of, well, everyone can do this. You can literally have a plugin to do data-driven graphics. This was in partnership with Adam Curtis, the amazing filmmaker. And it wanted to be doing kind of live updatable data and graphics. And at the time, that just wasn't possible in that environment. And so what the team did and the technical team behind United Visual Artists, a guy called Ash, who's one of the co-founders, you know, wrote the software to do this and kind of wrote the software pretty much on the fly. And it's a bit of a hallmark of the company. You know, we'll sort of have a problem or have a tour or have a gig and it won't have been done before, or some element of it won't have been done before. We'll work out, okay, let's try and work out how to do it. We'll write a solution to do it in the software and then kind of put it out on the tour. And that's been the hallmark of sort of pushing the boundaries of innovation from day one. And so what happened is this got hacked together, which was officially, I think, code name called Mosquito. And it was well, it was sort of bespoke PC and a lot of kind of lines of code. And this was put together to deliver, you know, these graphics. So that was kind of like the birth of what was called at the time D3. It became Mosquito. It was Mosquito, then it became D3. And so what happened over time is the what we decided is United Visual Artists just concentrated on the creative and we split and became, well, D3 became Disguise and we became a standalone technology company in its own right. So yeah, very early shot that I got from Ash just the other day, which kind of is I think the first example of it in the wild. And very quickly we started working with U2 and Willie Williams, who is their creative director behind that and who set up the very influential Treatment Studios. And this was sort of the beginning. So again, with no visualizer on this, pretty sort of data text entry. But when we got to this was a big LED. But you know, at the time, this was, I think, probably the most advanced LED that had ever gone on tour, designed by the great Stewfish. But there was no way of visualizing it. So I think the band were kind of going, yeah, this is, I like the concept. We're interested in doing this, but we can't see it. We don't know what it's going to look like. And so Ash wrote, and the team wrote, or created the visualizer, which you saw on the Ed Sheeran example. And this is the example here for this. So you can see again, it's the beginning of that kind of digital twin, the idea that every single, I mean, that was the pixel pitch for the for this LED. It was very sort of, spread out. And so this became the kind of hallmark which still powers all of the shows today. It's just been iterated on in time and developed. So this was the beginning of that way back when for the Vertigo tour, which was, I think, 2000, early 2000s. And again, another example of what the graphics were doing. And another person in the mix here is one of the sort of core programmers who's still doing and delivering the biggest shows, a gentleman nicknamed Smasher. And this is sort of triumvirate of people with Disguise, the platform, Treatment, the content, Stewfish, the sort of stage design, and amazing sort of programmers like Smasher delivering these things in a live environment. And for all of you who know, it's a really unforgiving environment. It's got to work, it's got to deliver night after night, and you can't have any mistakes or things that go wrong. This then left on, and this, we've enjoyed an amazing relationship with U2 and Treatment for many years. This became the 360 tour again. Visualizer came into the fore here because we were able to see what that amazing structure was going to look like in real time. Bit of a jump. Super Bowl, this, so we developed the kind of platform, we developed this to sort of enable these kind of big shows. And the biggest thing was like making sure the artists were comfortable and happy with kind of what this was going to look like, confident that it was going to deliver their, a great vision. So the visualizer was born out of that. But as the technology kind of, developed and carried on, this was a real sort of landmark show, again, with a different mix of partners for this one. One in particular, a content company called Silent Partners, run by JT Rooney. We came together and we looked at this idea of perspective-corrected content. And what this is, if you do a classic, you go to a pavement and you see a street artist doing that illusory effect where it looks like someone's either walking across a chasm or and if you look sort of to any one side, it breaks the illusion. But if you look at the right spot, it's this perfect kind of example. And this is what we realized at this time with a fixed camera, we could start to play around with this really interesting idea of perspective-corrected content. Again, creating a sort of digital twin of the environment. This was in Cinema 4D to really sort of map the content around that and create these amazing sort of this was all through projection at the time, but this idea that it worked sort of perfectly to create this sort of real sort of depth. So again, obviously the halftime show hugely watched and a broadcast moment. And so it was the software kind of plotted out where the camera position was and basically virtualized that camera position. So the camera then goes into the software. So you've got your digital twin of the environment of the stage. And then if you know where the camera is, what's Disguise is doing, or D3 at the time, is putting that all together. So it knows exactly where it's looking. And for this one, it was fixed. But very quickly, we realized, well, if you can digitize it and virtualize it, well, when you start moving it around, then you can have a real fun with it for a broadcast moment. And that became a lot of people called XR, but it also became virtual production as well. And so this was it all singing, all dancing. I think this was 2015. So again, we're sort of like evolving the journey here. Great show. And again, we've carried on doing most of the halftime shows ever since, which has been fantastic. And then the jump there was, again, this is getting a bit smaller, but this tees up quite an interesting moment around, this is around COVID time, where obviously, the industry had a huge shock, as did the world. And what was happening, that same idea of perspective-corrective content was enabling this opportunity to happen. So that's an LED floor on the bottom, and then that's an LED screen at the back. And the same idea of virtualizing the camera and putting this in together was enabling us to do this great show with Katy Perry for American Idol, where she stepped onto this environment, which was like that, and then it kind of all broke down and created this amazing kind of, I mean, basically like a really high-end live music video that just hadn't been done before. I mean, one thing of looking at this technology is it's a little bit like live visual effects. Normally, this would have to be taken out, put into the computer, a team of people to actually do a load of stuff to it. This was enabling people to do it live, in real time, and this kind of blew people away. It was a real kind of watershed moment for the technology. And again, this is a breakdown of what was happening, and so what was neat is what the technology enabled you to do is that you had the LED, but then something was called set extension enabled you to go further out of that. And so, you know, you weren't just seeing the sort of, you know, you weren't constrained by the box, and you could have a relatively small LED, and then you could extend it out, which was super cool. And this has been the sort of like the you know, this was the moment that created the opportunity to do VP and XR and things like that. And thankfully, at the time, because tours went completely stopped, as did the world, but artists still wanted to perform and do amazing concerts and experiences. And Billie Eilish was about to go on tour, amazing tour, which was created by Moment Factory and other partners. About to go out, COVID happened, couldn't do it. And so, you know, her and her team were like, well, we still want to do this show. We've got this amazing content. What can we do? So, this is a rather larger version of the Katy Perry setup. It was done by XR Studios at the time and with Moment Factory. And it's this amazing concert experience. So, this was all just streamed, but you could see this is the, you know, really immersive, really, really wonderful experience and graphics. And yes, it was only available via a stream, but at a time where people, you know, were indoors, it was a pretty sort of lapped up experience and just wonderful, you know, different scenes and different creative that was made by Moment Factory and the team, which was fantastic. So, and then a jump into sort of a quick, you know, you've seen a little bit of Joshua Tree. That's the Beyoncé Formation tour. It's the Ed Sheeran tour. So really sort of then just what kind of snowballed was, you know, the technology is really advanced. Screen technology is getting bigger. The hardware is getting more powerful, as in GPUs are getting more powerful. Graphics cards are getting more powerful. We're able to kind of stack the processing power and enable, you know, bigger sort of screens and bigger surfaces to be delivered. Although always, like I said, always a challenge, always sort of, you know, pushing the boundaries and pushing things to see what's possible. And we delivered, you know, these amazing shows over the years and continue to do so, really pushing the boundaries. So anyway, so that's it. Hopefully you can see there's a brief history of us because it really is mirroring what's happening in the space. And I really want to kind of like name check, as I have been up to this point, these other companies that, you know, be really worth, if you don't know them already, having a look at, because they're really important players in this space, and an individual as well called Ez Devlin, who's a wonderful, well, wonderful creative person, but also has delivered some of the most iconic set designs for the recent big concerts for like Jay-Z and Beyonce. And really, it's this amazing mix of technology, that's us, architecture. It's an interesting how they call themselves GFish Entertainment Architects, and it's not just a nice tagline. Well, it is a nice tagline, but it's actually about most of them are trained architects. Most of them come from the architectural field, and it's really telling because, you know, if you're in a 3D environment, as in a stadium or a tour environment, that's what you're playing with. You're playing with space. You're playing with understanding, like how to create an amazing space that will then deliver an amazing audience experience. And it's really, I think, key that they came out of that. The founder came out of that, and most of the company now are made up of trained architects. And we have Treatment, like I mentioned, Willie Williams, the additional member of U2, often called, and he's the creative director behind, you know, all of their concerts to date, and continuing through the recent, you know, Sphere concert in Vegas. And then Ez Devlin, we'll get into a little bit as well, has worked with most of these, or all of these, and works with us on things a lot as well. So Stewfish is going way back, and credit to Stewfish for these photos. So, you know, Mark Fisher was the original kind of founder of Stewfish, and he also set it up with Ray Winkler. And this was, you know, Pink Floyd, you know, the Wall tour. So it's one of the kind of like, you know, storytelling, theatre, design, architecture, you know, a physical wall bill, huge amount of, you know, different things going on in that space. And, you know, and he was an amazing draftsperson as well. He, you know, that's how he sort of got his ideas out and his designs out. He sketched them out, produced them. And I think they've done pretty much every single Rolling Stones tour that's ever been, I believe. So, and like I said, the architecture thing I think is really key. I think, I had a great conversation with one of the team recently just about, you know, it's very much around the creative. It's not around the technology. And that's the same, well, for us, even though we're the technology company, it's about what's the vision, what's the creative opportunity? Okay, how do we actually deliver it? And the one thing that they've been seeing more and more of, I mean, some concerts you do see just the massive screen, but even with those, you're then playing around with, well, how do you make an architecture out of that? Because you can, you know, if the screen's big enough, you can really sort of design anything within that. Could be a building, could be a building site, could be a landscape. So you're starting to, you know, almost like the screen is becoming the scenery or the scenic design. It's just becoming fully digitized. And they've worked with amazing people around the world. This was a good one in 2013, a tough one, as you can see by the face, Robbie Williams' face. That was a 3D printed object, which was then covered in about 50,000 LEDs to create this sort of seamless, unbelievable, screen. And I think that sort of leads on from what I was just saying around this idea of like, yeah, it could be just a giant screen, and it kind of is just a giant screen, but they're doing more of it. They're doing more with it than that. They're doing, they're creating a sense of kind of physical wonder as well as sort of virtual wonder at the same time. And another company in the mix that's worth looking out, if you don't know them already, Tate, they are responsible for, for example, Middle Beast, like doing that overarching kind of design of the whole site, sort of how it's going to be, how it works. And then they have an automation division. So again, all of the moving staging and staging parts. They also have, all the rigging, all the sort of the infrastructure behind doing this. So there really are sort of this interesting kind of chain of companies in the value chain that's coming together to do these things. And it requires incredible collaboration. And it's something that's getting harder and, well, not harder and harder. It's demanding more detailed collaboration further up because the technology now is the sort of one of the driving factors, and the opportunities to get out of the technology is sort of helping the creativity. So it has to be this perfect kind of symbiotic mix. Jumping to Joshua Tree, again, yes, a big screen, but really, it wasn't just a big screen. It was really looking at like how to create, an amazing immersive experience. Again, it was quite a stripped back tour, this one. So it has to, be led by, Willie Williams and the U2 team to go, well, what do they want out of it? And then, okay, in partnership with Stewfish, and then enabled by us, like how you actually bring that together. And crucially, how you then tour it. Because you could do it once, well, not easily, but you could do it once and that's tough enough. But then packing it down and touring it and making sure that really high resolution screen works every time was pretty tough. And this was it in its full glory. And, really seeing something. It's been eclipsed now. I mean, obviously, this was quite a few years ago, but an 8K screen at that scale had just never been seen before. So it wasn't about the technology, but it enabled a greater level of immersion that just hadn't been possible before. Hence the amount of screens or amount of phones up in the space, as you can see. But jumping to Adele, so a bit more recent. This was the recent weekends with Adele at the Coliseum in Las Vegas. Hugely successful show, and so Stewfish initially looked at like how to create, and in some of the pictures, I mean, these are nice. These are sort of development sketches and renders. It was just looking at like how to create pretty simple but classic, really classy environment. But it was also then you're starting to see in the sketch work there this real sort of level of design and motion that they wanted to create. So it isn't just this sort of fixed, almost like the idea of a curtain kind of closing and opening, but all of those items were motion controlled. And then the really tricky part, and it certainly caused some of the engineers back at base at the Skies, was projections were then mapped onto those surfaces, and the projections had to then track in real time as the panels started moving. And that had its challenges. But it came together brilliantly. There's also just a challenge of, I mean, for those who know, like basic iMag, as in putting up the video screen there, that's one thing. But then when all those panels are moving, and it's at a serious scale, and I think there are about 16 projectors for this one. Double check actually. Oh yeah, so jumping to treatment actually first before, I think it was about 16 projectors, huge amount of resolution. It was over 13 servers on our side. So where treatment come in is, as I said, to this point, Willie Williams, creative director of treatment, I mean, they're not just content creators. They really are looking to create the experience as well. So very, very close collaboration with, say, a Stewfish. You're kind of making that fabric, making that environment. And then you've got treatment going, okay, well, what's going to be in it, on it? And this is what's interesting, I think, in this space is getting it, or they're ahead of the game compared to, say, you see some of these huge architectural installations that are going up right now. And they're almost covered in LED. It's getting better, but in the not so recent distance, it was a bit of an afterthought what the content was going to be. It was a bit like, well, what's going to go on that? You spend all this money on that. What's actually going to go on it? And that's improving now because that is the architecture. But I think in this world, there's a much tighter understanding of like it all has to work together. So treatment, it's a huge surface. I think, yeah, 238 million pixels, 25 pieces of content. And, going back a little bit, as I've said, their story is very much, mirrored to ours, really tightly in terms of like all of the U2 concerts. We've been working really closely with them throughout the years. And like I said, Notch, a great piece of technology that's utilized, has been the mainstay for a long time and is now working much closer with UE as well. It's a lot of servers, 13. Oh, it's 15 projectors. So 4K projectors, 15. Huge amount of resolution, as was shown in the last slide. And that requires a huge amount of compute and a huge amount of redundancy. Hence why there's a lot of servers, but it requires a lot of redundancy as well. And then the software to tie it all together. And the software played a key part here. We've got a clever bit of software called OmniCal. And what that does, that's not the concept here, but what it does is it perfectly maps pixel accurate, almost like a LiDAR scan of the environment. And so you know exactly where the projectors need to be calibrated for. And you can run it constantly to make sure nothing drifts, nothing moves out of place. And this is really important for this one because you really needed to lock it to make sure nothing was kind of moving out of place at any point. And coming soon, a larger rather one. This has been announced, but still being developed. This is in Munich. So again, as we're talking about immersive shows getting even bigger, this is a pop-up. This is a temporary stadium. It's going to go up. I'm not sure what the run of it is at the moment. It's going to be in Munich, and it's going to be, an incredible show. And again, all of those players, all of us sort of going to come together to put this together and make it an amazing experience. And finally, in this kind of group is Ez Devlin. Again, U2 being a connection point here, but she's really been delivering and developing her style and theatre design and spatial design for a long time now. And this was a Game of Thrones tour with Jay-Z and Kanye West, and an amazing creating these sculptural moments, creating real sort of sense of architecture immersion in the shows, and she's just absolutely brilliant at it. There's a great documentary on Netflix called Abstract, which she's featured in, which I could highly recommend watching. This was the Formation tour, I believe, and that was the Miley Cyrus tour. So again, as you can see, just trying to do more, trying to create these environments, these immersive experiences to sort of really wow audiences. And she's a big believer of like, what's that shot that people want to come away and get from it? And yeah, if you're in New York, the Cooper Hewitt is running a really nice sort of show about her and all her work. And this was one recently in Manchester, England, where it was a collaboration with Danny Boyle and a few others to create this kind of like Matrix-inspired live sort of immersive theatre production. And again, what's really exciting is this word of convergence is coming more and more. And we're seeing sort of, screen technology, infiltrate theatre. And she's been a massive push for that. She did the lovely set design for the Lehman Trilogy, for those who've seen that, which is a kind of rotating stage environment and an LED screen around it. Wonderful. Okay, so that is sort of like a real sort of rapid, but look at the space and how that evolution's happened. That's how we've got to these incredible stages and these incredible shows on this massive scale. And so I'm going to look a little bit like what was happening and sort of maybe stalled a little bit, but what's continually being developed in the background. And with certain new technologies and headsets particularly, I think we're going to see it really sort of accelerate soon. So there's this notion of the virtualization of live performances. By that, I kind of mean, look, we've gone on this sort of journey and we've looked at, I mean, as the story you've just shown from us in Disguise, these amazing projection mappings. That's projection map for the Formation tour, huge scale. And then that then transition, and that wasn't just LED, that was LED and projection, so a mix of those things. That same technology, thankfully, sort of came to the rescue in COVID, where it was able to be put into a studio environment, still create an amazing immersive show. And then what we saw as well, and we were delivering concerts with one example was J Balvin on an XR stage on a studio with these immersive LED. And then what happened afterwards was that got piped into Fortnite, and you had this amazing experience where he's performing live and it's being shown in Fortnite to a new generation. And things like other platforms are coming online as well. And it's a real sort of, it's a sort of an easy win for these platforms. It's like, what do people want to do online? Well, they want to come together with their friends and they want to listen to music and go to great experiences. So that's why you saw a lot of these kind of earlier experiences. Snap did a partnership with Live Nation, Spotify were looking at this space. And even though there was an initial kind of, wave and it sort of died down a little bit, I think we're seeing it kind of resurge a little bit thanks to newer technologies. This was the Ariana Grande concert in Fortnite. Obviously, there were many other big concerts that have, like I said, died down a little bit. Part of the issue is, the experience is predominantly flat. Ultimately, if you're looking at this, you're looking at on mobile, you're looking on a laptop. That's great. It's still immersive, but it's still, we're sort of limited by the flatness of our screens. And really, that's a limitation in terms of, if I'm at a gig, And again, don't get me wrong, I still want to go to real gigs and a lot of them. But if I can't get to them, if I just look at it through a screen, it's not, you know, it's losing a lot of senses, it's losing a lot of awareness. But with the, you know, with the rollout of this in particular, and not just this, the Quest has been doing a good job for a while now, and they've been really pushing into the sort of immersive, you know, immersive like live music space. This is interesting because we do have a new interface into it. You know, this does allow us to look around and move around and hopefully in time walk around these spaces. And if this really does gain the traction that certainly Apple hope, and not in the industry, then it's going to allow this idea of, well, the reason why Apple are betting so hard on it is because it's not just a gaming device or a consumption device. It is a new computing platform, a new computing you know, paradigm. That's why they're going so big in it, and that's why we're such early, you know, early phase of it. If you remember back to early days of you know, mobile, we all think that this was kind of an overnight success. It really wasn't. You know, it didn't have 3G, had edge connectivity, didn't have an app store. It took a couple of years to get to 3, which is probably the first breakout device. So I think we're in that first stage. And you know, and if you remember the early apps, there were some all sorts of kind of gimmicky apps and silly apps and all that kind of stuff, as people were trying to work out. Now it's your wallet. Now it's your you know, now it's your you know, music device. It's a sort of essential part of a lot of things. So that's interesting from a spatial point of view. We're looking at that as kind of going, okay, this is going to be really interesting. And it's relevant for this space because this was an experience that was done by the really great company Magnopus with Madison Beer and Sony. And I think Verizon were involved as well. And they did a hyperreal scan of Madison Beer, like an amazing full 3D scan of her. It was phenomenal kind of work. Lovely UE environments designed and built. It was a digital twin of the Sony Music Hall. And but it was a flat experience. It was on mobile. Great, I can get it on mobile. It was very accessible, but it wasn't very immersive. And I think that's the exciting thing with the headsets. And again, it's not going to be an overnight thing. You know, that's a very expensive headset, $3,500. But again, as we know with these things, the early Macs were very expensive way back when in the 80s. So we're going to see that come down. And if it can create that experience where you're literally in it and walking around it, then that's going to be pretty game changing. It's not going to replace it. I don't think it's going to replace it, but not everyone can get a ticket to the Taylor Swift tour. Not everyone can get a ticket to some of these massive tours. So I think the opportunity for sort of a hybrid experience, which shouldn't then just actually be a digital twin of the main experience, because if you can do anything, well, then you're suddenly freed up when you can do anything. You don't have to worry about gravity. You don't have to worry about fire exits. You don't have to worry about all sorts of things. You can create a really, really incredible experience, which is exactly what Stewfish did with the Mill and Riot Games for one of their virtual bands. And obviously, if you've got a band that's completely virtual anyway, this technology makes a ton of sense. This is a really fun project. I was connected with it when I was at the Mill, and Riot Games were just fantastic. They were like, right, we've got this band and we want to do something, you know, really, really sort of never been done before. And what was great about it, getting Stewfish involved, and they're doing more of these types of projects now and again. They still approached it in the same way, but you know, they weren't encumbered by how are you going to rig and put down that, and how are you going to, you know, and could you even create that? You know, suddenly their horizon and their opportunities was completely sort of widened, and so they had a ton of fun putting together what was about, I think, a 50-minute, maybe nearly an hour experience. All motion captured. It was meant to be live. It wasn't in the end, thanks to COVID, but it was near live, and it could have been live, and it was motion tracked performances into the environment with all the band members, you know, rendered beautifully by the artists at the Mill. So it was a really amazing experience. Again, though, you know, it was flat and it was lacking kind of interactivity. And I think what we're seeing is, you know, people still want that level of interactivity, or they want to see what's possible in these worlds that isn't just a replication of going to a gig, because A, you can't replicate it, and B, you shouldn't. You know, just because technology can enable something shouldn't just mean we'll just replicate it. Let's push it and do something different. And this is a neat company, actually, I met up with in South By. They're a UK company, and they're doing some really nice volumetric capture work. And so for this, obviously, this was mocap. So you can see the studio there. It was all like OptiTrack, pretty serious setup, and you know, not very mobile. What's interesting is there's two routes to go down. You can either do mocap, motion capture, which is normally you have to get suited up, so there's a little bit of an incumbence for the artist, and or you can do volumetric capture. Now, volumetric capture is great because you can't really see the rig there, but the performer's in the middle and has got an array of about 10 cameras, and what that's doing is that's creating almost like a 3D video. So it's not graphics, it's actual video, and it's creating a 3D video. So you can create an AR experience, and you can create that's a virtual platform that they run as well. And so the artist looks real. And what's neat about it is the artist has got a monitor there, and the artist is able to see the avatars in that space and be able to kind of call out in real time, oh, hey, you know, sensor, sensor, 1, 2, 3, like, you know, and shout them out and sort of generate that kind of artist and audience participation, which is really interesting. So it's early days, but the technology is really, really neat. And we're definitely hoping to work with them on how we sort of bring that into the platform. Because, you know, for example, if you're at Glastonbury or at Coachella, you still want to be there, but a lot of people can't be there. Great, you can watch the 2D feed, but it'd be really interesting to watch a 3D feed of that as well, especially if you have a headset. So that's kind of where we're sort of pushing towards. It's going, it's not a replacement of, it's an augmentation to allow amazing experiences to happen in the real world that hopefully you get to go and see and feel. An augmentation, because what's happening as well is we're working with Snap, and Snap are really pushing in the space to create, you know, people are on their phone. Some artists don't like it. That's fine. A lot of people are on their phones anyway recording, so how can you create an additional experience there? And then going fully virtual, this was a test that we did, proof of concept that we did, which was, again, like piping in a real-time environment into a completely virtual world. So the idea and the building blocks to get to that platform where you really can create just these layers of reality. So I'm like in person, physically, I may want to augment that with an amazing AR experience. And I may not be able to get there, so I want to potentially have, well, you can have a great 2D experience, and increasingly when the headsets catch up, you can have an amazing immersive 3D experience. So it's like, and that should all be controlled by sort of one platform as opposed to multiple different things trying to talk to each other. Because the tough part is doing is going up from the physical. That's really hard, as in, and that's why, you know, all of those companies and us have been doing it for many years and getting the timing, getting the sync, getting the scale, getting the redundancy, getting all those things right, and then pushing into the virtual. We're feeling that's the kind of the best way to go at the moment. So that's sort of like a little look at the future. A quick one on convergence before wrapping up. This is a really old diagram from the 50s. I really love it. If you can just sort of make it out, and obviously this is focused on Walt Disney Studios and studios at the center, but if you put sort of music at the center or put any other of those touch points, it's the same playbook that's being used today, you know, and some. It's just been kind of... another word, weaponized, but it's just been sort of increased by the technology opportunities. So you're now seeing, you know, a movie or a game become a movie or a game become a TV show, and then the TV show becoming a location-based experience, and then the location-based experience becoming a theater production, and the theater production becoming an amazing live immersive experience. And you're seeing all these touch points because people want to be immersed in these worlds, whether the world be Taylor Swift or whether the world be you know, an amazing movie or The Last of Us, the incredible TV show. People want to be immersed in these worlds. And so it's this idea of transforming IP or transverging. And these two amazing people did this brilliantly recently, just on sort of two medium, which is going from, okay, we're going to take our concert, we're going to make an amazing film. And what was really interesting, certainly with Taylor Swift, was we're gonna release it in an interesting way. And they went direct to the distributor to do that. And the interesting thing here is that's just one of those touch points. What about the other ones, like we touched upon? What about the more immersive 3D experience? What other experiences that they can create? And this is quite a busy slide and won't sort of dig into it too sort of deeply. But what we're looking at more and more is that the platform that we've got and the content that runs on it, you know, you can go from an amazing live show to then doing a promo of it. So say you've created all these graphics, you can quickly then put that into a promo experience and run that really, really well. That could become a location-based entertainment platform or experience. That could then become film content, and that could become a metaverse activation. So what's really neat is seeing those kind of different touch points being lit up. And it is that old playbook, you know, just being modernized for the new age. So just to kind of wrap up, on all of this, we are in this amazing new era of visual experience. There's no denying it. This is the amazing Marco Brambilla featured in Sphere in Vegas as part of the U2 concert. You know, stunning, stunning work, stunning graphics. But we're bombarded with visual material, sometimes a bit too much, but we are just sort of, you know, really, really, this experience, whether it be massive billboards, massive buildings, or massive concerts. There are these sort of interesting trends that we're seeing as well, which is, you know, the IMAXification of live events. They're getting bigger. This is what we've been talking about today. But there's other ones as well. VP is accelerating. I'm not going to get into Gen AI here. There's been lots of conversations about it and platforms and panels this last week. Spatial computing is fascinating for the reasons I mentioned. And then this immersive and real-time everywhere. You're seeing the built environment become more immersive. So look, these live shows are getting bigger. This is what we've been talking about. And they really are, you know, incredible shows. I was very lucky to go to the U2 concert, which we're very proud of. And it was an amazing show. I mean, an amazing show because they're an amazing artist, an amazing band, first and foremost. And what was great is the balance between spectacle and show. And I think that's a really important kind of, you know, takeout, is that you can get some experiences, whether it be a show or a location-based experience, where they're just not, you know, they're not great experiences. You know, this is that perfect marriage. And featuring all those people I talked about, from Stewfish to Treatment, to Ez Devlin and to Disguise. Tier one artists are dreaming even bigger to connect with their audiences. They want to, you know, create these amazing shows as well. And as you've seen from this kind of group of people coming together, it's a new breed of creative and technical team. Well, it's a new breed. It's an evolving breed. You know, these teams have been together, understanding how to deliver these amazing shows. And we're writing new software to enable them, you know, how to create these new shows. We're literally, as I said at the beginning, these things haven't been done before sometimes, and so it's really coming together, going, what's the creative vision? What's the technical infrastructure? Okay, how do we do this? Okay, let's write software. Let's push the platform to deliver something that's never been done before. Immersive experiences are proliferating exponentially. This is the wonderful Lightroom. Can't recommend it enough. They're going to be growing around the world. Lovely experience. The Hockney one was great. It's basically an immersive documentary. It's like being in his mind for 45 minutes, which is a pretty nice place to be. Great experience. This market's set to double by 2027. It's absolutely scaling. You know, people want these experiences. There are a lot of duff experiences out there, though. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people who are just going, hey, just because we can put a massive canvas up, let's do it. And they're forgetting, what's the story? What's the narrative? Is there IP? Like, all those things that are sort of forgotten. It's the classic thing, but it's done a lot sometimes. And then, you know, this is fascinating. I showed it at the beginning. The built environment is becoming an immersive canvas. Like, we're seeing it everywhere. We're seeing LED, buildings go up. This is the amazing Al Wasl Dome, which is still up. So if you go to Dubai, you go to Expo, it's going to be up for a long time. Incredible. It just won a Guinness World Record for the biggest interactive, because there's an interactive mode where you can literally control the canvas with an iPad, which is mind-blowing. This is in Qadir in Saudi Arabia. This is another level of concept at the moment. The wonderful architects Populous are behind this, and these visualizations from this. The whole outside is LED. The whole inside is LED. And then there's a huge amount of automation. The end of the pitch kind of opens to reveal this amazing view because it's perched on a cliff. Unbelievable building. So architecture is being transformed by screens. Huge investment in theme parks. Again, the ultimate immersive experience, and brands want to inspire their audiences as well at unprecedented scale and speed. And we're kind of building out, certainly for the physical environment, this platform idea, really leaning into spatial, which we've been doing for a long time, as you've seen, the digital twin of things, how we can make that a platform to deliver these immersive experiences. Filmmakers, you know, are dreaming ever more. It's brilliant that the strikes are over for many reasons, and that's brilliant that it's coming back. This is the wonderful Batman, and that's an LED screen, and Greg Fraser, the great DP behind that. You know, you can set Magic Hour for a week. I can't remember how many days they shot this, but like, it's set and it looks amazing, and you can concentrate on the actor's performance and a great final look. And this is the brilliant Society of the Snow, harrowing film that was up for an Oscar from Spain. And again, you know, there's this interesting thing that's happening. There is a challenge with costs. You know, costs are a real concern for many. It's still delivering that quality, but at a slightly more manageable cost as well. And, you know, we've been doing this as a company at Disguise, but like for 20 years, you know, really connecting the physical and the virtual worlds together in a major way. And like I said, it's been a bit flat. You know, they've been amazing, but like, how can we make that more experiential? I think that's the next wave. You know, the internet's digitized a lot. It's digitized movies. It's digitized content. It's digitized a lot. It hasn't really been able to digitize experience. Well, there's a potential with these, depending on how the next 5 years go, 5, 10 years, that, you know, the virtualization or the digitization of experience can create, you know, amazing experiences that are, you know, not a replacement, but a valuable addition to these amazing immersive concerts. Like I said, Snap are looking at this space, and we're working really closely with them as well, and also bringing it to the home. This is obviously sort of more adventurous one, but like more experiences. One of my best experiences at home was with the Magic Leap platform and Tanandi, the Sigur Rós experience, which was amazing because it was so personalized. I was at home, it was augmented reality, and it was just happening right there. And it was the most personalized experience. You can't create that any other way because everything's either on a screen and it's sort of within a bounding box, but that was immersed. That was all physically throughout my house, which was amazing. And we're trying to deliver all of this on our platform. That's kind of what we're trying to do at Disguise. But you know, we are just the platform. The big thing is like we work with, you know, amazing content creators as you've seen in this space to enable all of this. And it's only working with them that we're able to deliver all these amazing, increasingly scaled experiences and shows. And just to end on Walt Disney, you know, we keep moving forward, opening new doors and doing new things because we're curious, and curiosity keeps leading us down new paths. And I think that's the hallmark of it. You know, there's still massive opportunities for smaller gigs and smaller opportunities and all of these things, but you know, we also want to be pushing the boundaries as well and looking at new things, not at the expense of, but just to sort of create more wonder and do new amazing things. So with that, I'll just say thank you very much. And if there are any questions, feel free to ask away. But yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, constantly. I think, and there's even been audio discussions as well. I mean, there's, you know, and again, it's not an area we dabble with hugely, but we partner up with the likes of, say, L-Acoustics and some of the biggest companies in the world to do this. And there's interesting talks around that. It's like how you could hear different parts of it, how you could hear different stems, how you could, you know, that's kind of an interesting idea because I might choose to listen to just the drums, or I might listen to the guitar, or that's kind of an interesting take on that, which I think does, you know, connect and bring people in more. I think certainly on the glasses side of things, I mean, I think as we've seen with Apple and Magic Leap to a certain extent, it's still a long way off. You know, it's just the technology and the engineering to just get it working. I think what you're seeing though with Meta, for example, is obviously the glasses, which are much more simplified in a way. I mean, they're not, they're very advanced and they're doing a lot, certainly with machine learning. But I think what's really exciting is like when you get it's not a great experience holding your phone up. Like, you know, it's for lots of reasons. And the AR through that, you know, you have to have a really good AR experience to do that. So it's really exciting. And this is what the opportunity was with Magic Leap early days was just, yeah, why everyone gets so excited about it is because if you can imagine solving all of those technical problems and they are really tough, then at the end of it, it's like, wow, it's amazing. It's like you can create the most incredible experience. You can have, you know, Pink Floyd style, you know, flying pigs just coming right by your seat. So I think there's definitely a way to do that because you're right. If you're right up in the nosebleeds, you're pretty far away. I mean, I do think, thankfully, technology, there's an amazing sound company called Holoplot, which are actually in Sphere, and they do very amazing bi-directional, they've just got a really neat platform, hardware and software platform. Amazing. And you know, that's really helping as well because, you know, gone are the days or going are the days of like you're sat right back and you're hearing, you know, pretty terrible audio, or not terrible audio, but just not great audio. So I think those things, I think the technology is helping a little bit. So I think just even in the stepping stones, like the basic technology as in the core sound, the core visuals can help close that. And then more interesting ones like spatial audio or spatial computing experiences can be great. Not that I'm aware of, actually. I'm sure there have been. Not that we've been aware of. I mean, we have technically looked at how to do it. It's actually more for headsets and it's more of a proof of concept, but how to actually, it's just no mean feat, not least with connectivity and things like that, but how to deliver an AR show to multiple headsets. So it's a similar thing. It's actually easier if you put it on a screen, it's easier than that. But that's something we've been looking at. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, no, it's a really good question, and I definitely did favor the larger ones, but it's a really good question. We are trying to do that. I mean, certainly where we've, you know, the platform's used a lot. It's a really popular platform with, you know, visual programmers and lighting people. Some of it can be a bit expensive, but we are actually trying to bring that a bit more accessible. And there's great places like there's this wonderful facility in the UK called Production Park, and there's another one in the US called Rocklitz, where a lot of the concerts sort of come out of. And there's a lot of training programs and such going on there to try and democratize and make it more accessible. So yeah, and there are other platforms that are sort of ex, you know, making it more accessible as well. So I think so, because I think that is the, you know, we're seeing it across multiple industries. We're seeing like the absolute tier one top like happening, and there is a challenge for that middle, and we're kind of aware of it. So it's really how, yeah, we can still support that is really important. Yeah, I mean Coldplay as well, I think, you know, done with the bands and such like. Yeah, it's a good point actually. I think it probably has tapered off a little bit. I mean it's really tough to, I mean it's almost, this stuff's tough, but at least it's kind of controlled in the infrastructure in a way. You know, when you're adding those elements, interactivity is hard as well in terms of what's hard about it is making it actually personal, because if you've got like, I don't know, 80,000 people trying to have that interactive experience is really tough, because everyone, you know, you can only, I don't know how many, if you've got X amount of balloons, or that's why the wrist thing's quite good. That's why mobile is quite good. It's a bit of a dance with mobile, is how to make it, yeah, you know, not distracting and not taking away from it, but actually additive. So I think, but that can be very personalized, because then suddenly you're getting your own screen to a certain extent. So yeah, in a way, I can see why it has. It's almost a lot's just gone in content and scale, and that's, and again, it comes of trade-offs with investment. You know, those kind of experiences do, you know, cost a lot to do as well, and they're just a bit more unwieldy to kind of roll out day in, well, week in, week out. Thanks. Yeah, no, it's a really fair point. I mean, no, I haven't touched upon it, but what I'm encouraged with is, I'm a real, you know, I'm really interested in spatial computing. I think that has huge opportunities to help that. I mean, it's really hard. It's a bit like, I remember early days of mobile and designing for mobile and UX. That's kind of like the birth of the Vue X, which has almost just become subsumed into a ton of design work now. And that was kind of tough and new, and working out that and trying to work out, you know, people having enough trouble on accessibility on desktop, let alone mobile. I do think that there's a real opportunity here, because I'm a real fan of spatial audio. I think it's amazing. So I think in terms of, I mean, the whole point of spatial computing is it's meant to be collapsing the interface or blurring the interface. It makes it quite hard because you don't know where someone is or what they're doing or what they're looking at. So there's some difficult principles to kind of get your head around. But I do think that it can be then much more adapted to different people and different types of needs. You know, it's just a recent presentation, and it was fantastic, like how they were presenting the sort of, whether it be signing, whether it be audio direct, and a few other things. So it's totally possible, but it just needs to be built in and thought from the ground up. And the hope is, but some of these things don't happen. The hope is, because of the birth of a new platform, people can sort of really start from the ground up and kind of go, okay, how do we weave in really important, you know, accessibility needs to the UX process or to the sort of design process? So I kind of, yeah, I don't want to be sort of, and naive, or kind of like think that, oh, it'll just be fine. It won't, if without dedicated effort. But I do think the technology that it is can offer is really good. You know, in terms of like it can allow for more opportunities to support that, I hope. I think so. Yeah, I think so. And potentially because it's new, it's learning new things to do that. You know, it's not just lazy. Well, it's not laziness. It's just not. It's because it's like, wow, they're trying to work out how to do the basics, and then also, but I think if you're going into it, and I think it's much better now, which is great, going into it with the wide knowledge of like it's not just for this subset of people, or I'm not just going to rush this out. It's like it's got to be wide. Then at least you're going into it able to kind of design accordingly. Thanks. Well, thanks all. Have a good rest of the day.